From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Tuesday night when the polls closed in the primary elections. For all candidates, it's a nervous and relatively helpless time. There is nothing more they can do in that moment. But for candidates who had previously run and lost, it's especially nerve-wracking. And on Tuesday night, three women broke through. Running in her fourth election, Rachel Barnhart won. She'll be the Democratic candidate for the Monroe County Legislature's 21st District and very likely the winner in the fall, if history is a guide. Mary Lupien won her five-way race for the Democratic nomination for City Council in Rochester's East District. Eversha Roman won her race for the Democratic nod in the County Legislature's 26th District. This hour, a conversation about persistence, about how they won. We're also going to discuss their views of local party politics and what they've learned with these experiences. So hello to our guests this hour. Rachel Barnhart, I was going to say member, but you're not a member yet of the legislature, but history is a guide that you will be in November. It's nice to have you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Eversha Roman, and same deal. I have to keep remembering that we've got to vote in November here, but very likely they're all going to be elected, and it's nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us is Mary Lupien. Mary, nice to have you. Thank you for being back here.
Thank you.
Just a note to our engineering guides here. Because we had morning pledge, we may be actually be hearing the back room mics there, so we'll get all of those squared away here. This, for you, Rachel Barnhart, was election number four. And you tweeted on Tuesday night, well, what do you know? I won an election. That's not the right word. This is a question I don't usually like, but I am going to ask you this. How did it feel on Tuesday night?
I'm still processing all of the emotions relating to this victory. The stakes were really high in this election. I mean, they were very high for me personally, obviously with my future in politics. They were high for the local Democratic Party, and they were high for the neighbors of my district. I'm thrilled that I received their support, and I'm looking forward to representing us.
Well, and I'll ask you the same thing, Mary Lupien. Tuesday night was not a hard election, it turned out, for you. You had over 60, because Rachel, halfway through the night, I'm looking at the numbers in Rachel's race, and it was like 51-49, something like that, right?
Yes, I knew that my best districts hadn't come in yet, and but yeah, it was a little closer than I was hoping early on, but we pulled it through.
Okay, now for you, it was never close. Mary Lupien was going to coast. Those first numbers came in. Did you know when the first numbers came in that, my gosh, we've done it?
I think so. I mean, this happened last time too. I prefer not to know until it's all over. I don't like the roller coaster. So I tried to stay away from it, but they just kept shouting it out. So they wouldn't let me. So yeah, I mean, the very first polls that came in having 64% was nuts, and it seemed to stay around that the whole time. I'm just really grateful. They asked me how I felt, and I said, I feel like I have a lot of responsibility. So I have been focused on now the work starts and kind of putting my head in that frame. We do have an election in November, but you know.
No, you're going to be on council. I mean, that's just the reality of history as a guide here. And nobody gets over 60% in a five-way race. That's remarkable. I mean, Joe Morelli won his Democratic primary, of which Rachel was a part, with, I don't remember his exact total. He didn't get
50%. In the mid-40s.
Yeah, he didn't get 50% in a four-way race. So that is a remarkable achievement. We're going to talk about how they did that. Eversha also got over 60%. Did you know? There's this video on Facebook of people going nuts. And, you know, everyone's going crazy and hugging. Was that when the first numbers came in, or was that when the last numbers came in?
That was when the last numbers
when there was no
in.
Other chance for that. But you had to know pretty early, too, that it was going well.
It kept going. I mean, it looked like it was going well, right? It felt like things were going to go well. But it was just hard to kind of believe that you could outwork someone who is definitely a hard worker. We've continued to kind of push forward the message that we need someone who can represent us. And I think the people of the 26 realized that I was that person. But every single district that kept coming in, we kept saying, okay, it looks good. It looks great. We think we're getting there. And then finally, even when it said no more districts to report, I think you saw the moment in which we were like, no, that's it. Because for us, since the district was split up, right, so you have Gates and you have Grease in it, all the reporting wasn't necessarily coming from one place. So you saw on Facebook the moment in which we realized that we had, in fact, won.
That had to be an amazing moment.
You saw it. Ugly face crying.
Well, this hour, I kind of want to lay out a little map where we're going to go this hour, because I think there's a lot that we should hit. Certainly what I want to talk about is the substance of why the winners of these races who are in the room today think they did win. The substance of the issues, not just what we call horse race politics, et cetera, but the issues that resonate with people, because all three of them have done a remarkable amount of work going door to door, talking to people directly, going to community events, and trying to understand their districts. They also, we should talk about the fact, have teams of people who've been working with them, some for multiple elections, who have stayed through. And essentially, that work has been a team effort in many different directions. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about decisions whether to run again or not. We're going to talk about what party politics mean locally. But on that subject of when you decide whether you want to do this or not, let me ask all three of you, having run before and not come out ahead, I said before the hour began, run unsuccessfully. That is not really a fair term. Anybody who runs for office has my respect, and success is measured very differently. But having run before and not won elections, Rachel, this was number four for you, and I think you told our Brett Dahlberg on election night, you were asked to run. This wasn't even a case where you said, I'm going to jump in and go for County Ledge.
I was asked to run this race at the very last minute by the leader of the 21st District Committee on the Monroe County Democratic Committee. This was not on my radar. I had a lot of other things going on. I'm finishing my MPA at Syracuse University. I'm doing a lot of freelance PR work. And I was taking a break from politics, but Anthony Plunzins, he said, I don't have another candidate, and you are the best candidate. You have won this district before. People know you. They like you here. You know this district. Please run. And I said, if you really can't find anybody, get back to me. And he could not. Mark Moyo, who has the seat now, ran for city court judge. They asked Carrie Andrews, who had held the seat before, to run again. She said no. So they came back to me. And I gave it a lot of thought, and I said, well, I've come this far, and this is a wonderful opportunity to serve. And I'm committed to service. And my message has been the same from the start. My message has been we need better politics, we need better government, and I have talked about the same issues. And the 21st District, you know, is a microcosm of the city of Rochester. It has the wealthiest people, and it has some of the poorest people. And it is so diverse. And I was excited about the opportunity to do it. So that was my decision to do it. And I knew that we were going to face a lot of stuff during the race, and we did.
Define stuff.
I knew that we were going to be on our own, that we would have to run a very grassroots campaign. And I knew that we were going to have some very powerful people working against us.
But you were recruited by a party leader.
Well, you know, one of the things you learn in Democratic politics anywhere is there's nothing like a primary elections. People have long memories. And it worked out exactly the way I thought it would work out. And we had a plan. The plan was to run a very neighbor-oriented, positive campaign. All of my literature featured endorsements from my neighbors because I knew those were the only endorsements I was going to get. But we highlighted the relationships that I had. I made a lot of new relationships, and I knocked on 3,000 doors. And we kept hammering home, here are the issues of the district. We're listening to our neighbors. We're caring about our neighbors. And a wonderful thing happened by the end. People kept my mailers and they kept my door cards. And they were calling me for help solving their problems. They were calling me just to chat. We deepened and developed new relationships, and I'm very excited, really excited about how it worked out.
Now, having run three times, you've been very open and very public about the fact that it's not only hard to run a race and not win the race, but it's been the manner in which you have not been elected into the previous seats has been hard on you. You've written about that in different ways. Did that weigh in on you? Did you think, look, I don't know that I could do this again?
I'm a journalist, so I like to tell stories. I'm very transparent. I like to talk about the things that I see and the things that are going on. So I've shared that experience very openly with the public, and I've learned a lot, and I've grown a lot as a candidate. And I think that one thing I've learned, one of my big issues is talking about government transparency, talking about accountability, talking about ethics. Those things are very, very important to me. But they're not very important to Democratic primary voters. Democratic primary voters, you really don't like to hear those things when you're talking about other Democrats. They want to talk about other issues too, which I do. And so that was one of the lessons that I have learned. And you know, I also you know have shared my frustrations with talking about problems in our community, talking about a broken system, talking about things we need to do better, and being accused of being negative. You know, talking about records, that's frustrating to me because I think that we should be able to have civil discussion about issues, be able to disagree, and not have it equated to a personal attack. We should be able to disagree without being disagreeable. But, you know, again, I understood that in this race, you know, I really needed to stay focused on my neighbors, stay focused on issues, be really positive, and running for an open seat really affords you an opportunity to do that.
So one more point with Rachel, and then we'll turn to the other guests for their own decision on their various processes. You've heard it before from those who opposed you within the Democratic Party that, quote, she's not a team player. And I know that bothers you. When you hear that, what do you want people to know about what you think a team player is?
Well, at first, I think it's a tired trope to say that a woman who speaks truth to power, a woman who talks about wrongdoing is somehow unprofessional, not able to get along with people, not able to work with people. And all of those people who say those things have never worked with me. And I'm on one team, and that's the citizens of this community. And again, we should be able to talk to each other about things we disagree about and work on common solutions. And we don't have to agree all the time. And I think that we don't want legislators in particular who go along to get along. Legislators are supposed to be the watchdogs of government. They're supposed to be an important check on the executive branch. We do not want them all on the same team all the time. That is not going to work for citizens at all. And we have seen problems in our community where you have people who are afraid to speak up, and then you have problems as a result. There are times when you're going to totally agree on things, and there are times when you're going to have to work really closely together to get things done, and there are other times you're going to have to speak up and say, you know, this really isn't right, and can we do this in a different way?
Do you think your relationships that have been ruptured in the past with various party officials, party leaders, et cetera, can be improved now going forward?
I received a number of phone calls yesterday from elected officials, and I think it was appropriate that they called me, and I pledged to work with them, and they pledged to do the same.
Party leaders locally?
Elected officials locally, some on the county legislature.
Any that you have run against in the past?
Yes. Two, actually.
So the mayor called you?
And so did Harry Bronson.
Were you surprised?
I was not surprised Harry Bronson called me. I was surprised Lovely Warren called me, but I welcomed her phone call. I think it was appropriate, and I was grateful for it.
Okay. And if she says, are you ready to work with me, what's your answer?
Of course. That doesn't change the fact that, you know, I might say things that that I disagree with her about. And one of the things about Lovely Warren, and I realized this during this campaign more than any other, you know, we have a lot of the same supporters, and you could look at the election results in certain districts and see that. A lot of people really care about both of us, and for the same reasons. I mean, we're both fighters. We both speak our minds, and I think that we both have a lot to contribute, and I think we're both here for the same reasons.
Well, Aversia Roman said before the program began, speaking of knowing your voters, that you felt like when you decided to run, you were pretty organized, that you got a good sense for how many voters you needed, what you were tracking. This is your second time running in politics.
It is.
How did you decide? How did you make that decision? And tell me about the process here.
Okay, so I've been working in the political realm for about 10 years, working on various campaigns, just being active in my community in different ways. The first time I chose to run, I was asked to run, and I said yes. I enjoyed that entire time. Once I was unsuccessful in not achieving the ultimate goal in that particular race was to be a member of the legislature, I was actually asked, what did you learn? And that helped me to reflect. Helped me to reflect on, what did I learn? Did I appreciate the process? Was I okay and comfortable with doing it again? So I had every intent of running again because there are some glass ceilings that I feel that the legislature needs to have shattered. We need to start having conversations about the representation that is happening on a local level. And I definitely want to be a part of continuing that conversation. You hear a lot of people talk about inclusion. You hear a lot of people talk about diversity, but there aren't many people who are stepping up to the plate and having people support them when they do that.
So when you decided to do it, you clearly were organized enough to know what you expected to need to win. How do you go about that process?
So, one of the things that I've been privileged of being a part of is the Women Elect program here in Rochester. I've been instrumental in keeping it here. And you learn things. You learn things about organizing. You learn things about, your community and your neighborhood, especially if you're definitely an active part of it. As you go about looking at the numbers, you go through them, you realize what you need, you realize if it's possible. Overwhelmingly, within the 26th legislative district, we have, 2/3 of registrants are Democrats. So when I chose to, in the opinion of some people, challenge a Democrat, I knew that the people of the 26th wanted someone who was consistent with their values. So you just look at the numbers, you realize that folks are paying attention, especially with what's going on nationally and locally, too. And I just had a gut feeling.
So Rachel talked about what she learned from previous elections and the issues that might matter, especially in a primary campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly ethics and the watchdog work that she's done throughout her career, I would be shocked. And we're going to get back into this in a moment if it doesn't drive some of her work in the legislature. But she also focused on just door-to-door, dirt under the fingernails work of understanding what people want and need in their own neighborhoods. What are the issues that you think mattered in your own legislative district?
Overall, change. I think a lot of individuals appreciated the message of change, right? We can't continue to do what we've been doing, the county and the city as well, right? I mean, we are in dire need of something new, of something fresh, a new perspective. With my background in human services, that was one of the things that I continued to talk about, right? When you have a budget so large and half of it is in the human service sector, how many business people can you have making those choices? Those kinds of things where you talk to the mothers, the teachers, the social workers at doors, and they understand that every day when they go to work, they hear the realities of what's going on in the community, and so do I. People appreciated that.
Rachel talked about how the previous campaigns were tough, and this campaign was tough. You said that your previous race, you enjoyed it. What was your experience this time around, and what is the hardest part of making this, frankly, a sacrifice to run, whether you win the election or not?
Absolutely. So, both times were sacrifices. Both had enjoyable moments. Both had super difficult moments, right? You have to have confidence in yourself, right? It's not easy at all when you're being attacked, when you're being questioned, when your integrity that you've helped to build your entire life is torn down in front of you. You have to have a super solid support system. So for me, really the second time around, I had to evaluate my current situation, understand that it's not just about me. And kind of move forward with the reality that maybe it might have been a second loss. But I had a group of people, community members, who just weren't okay with that type of representation.
When you say watching your integrity torn down in front of you,
mm-hmm.
Can I just ask a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to ask you what that really means. Mm-hmm. And then are there moments where you think, look, we're all Democrats here. Like, this mm-hmm. is really hard to see this
Absolutely.
Happening. So what did you mean by having your integrity attacked that way?
Unfortunately, sometimes some of the messaging is extremely negative. And sometimes you can be negative and spew facts. But sometimes there are negative messages that are put out there. For example, one of the last messages was that I pretended to grow up in poverty.
Mm. Oh.
So there's that. So to kind of to be questioned on your reality, and then the unfortunate thing is that some people believe it, right? So you have to work through those emotions and, you know your own struggle and your own...
Who wrote that mailer questioning your own background growing up in poverty?
My opponent.
You think personally wrote it?
It was sent out by his campaign.
What do you do in a moment like that? I mean, it's hard to counter that.
Well, there, I don't think there's a need to counter when you, you know, have a strong a presence, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So the reality is that I have my resume, per se, right? I have my reality. I'm exactly who I say I am. And I think people understand that, right?
But is there a party that's thinking, look, we're going to disagree on issues. Mm-hmm. We're going to want to promote ourselves. But I cannot believe that you are trying to cut me this way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're going to definitely feel that way, right? I can't believe that someone would have the audacity to say, you know, poor people don't deserve education. They don't deserve a parent who sacrifices to make sure that they receive, you know, a great education opportunity. So really what you do is you just keep trucking forward. You realize that you are blessed to receive those opportunities. And then you just let your work speak for itself.
Let me turn to Mary Lupien, who won a five-way race, as we mentioned, in dominant fashion and is going to be on Rochester City Council. Your previous race, you missed by about an inch, City Council.
That's right.
Remember correctly, the last slot you missed narrowly.
1 inch and 1,000 votes.
1 inch, 1,000. That's an inch politically.
Yeah.
and that's not going to be the case this time around. But tell me about your consideration. After that narrow miss last time, did you know that night this isn't over? Did you need some time? How did you feel?
That next day, I was messaging Elaine Spall saying, okay, there's another election in 2 years. I know you had said you weren't maybe thinking about running again. Let's go, which is part of the drama of this race. But I knew immediately.
Oh, no, you got to tell that story. You can't give us a little teaser.
Yeah.
Part of the drama.
There's no drama. No. So I knew immediately that I wanted to run again. And it, with that kind of support that we received on a first, I came out of nowhere. I was an activist. You know, Bernie Sanders was who inspired me to run. And I just, you know, in working on that campaign, hearing over and over again, if you want social change, you have to stand up and run for local office. And I started 2 years before that last election, just, meeting people out in the community and learning what kinds of things were going on in Rochester and learning what city council even was. I view last race as very successful. I didn't ultimately win, but everything I learned along the way and the relationships I built, I knew we had something, and I knew people were resonating with our message. And so I knew that I wanted to run again. I didn't know what race. I didn't know if Elaine was going to run again. We had heard a few months before she decided to step down that she was not going to run again and that she had already picked her successor.
And it wasn't you.
And it wasn't me.
You know that that was coming? I mean, did you think that she might endorse you?
No. No, we knew.
Okay.
Our relationship started to break down, and I wasn't able to have a conversation with her about it the entire 14 months after that last election. So when we started hearing that she, actually there were maybe one or two other people I had heard through the political grapevine, which is very chatty, that she had been wanting someone else that wasn't me. So when we started hearing Geraci's name pretty consistently, like we knew that was going to happen. We just didn't know when. And I think for all of us, the surprise of the state changing the election date threw us, you know, we had to get started really quickly. So we didn't know when Elaine was going to make her announcement. So we had been organizing since August, knowing that this opportunity was coming. Even still, the middle of January was a surprise for us.
Is the party fair and open to voices that that maybe some power holders haven't supported?
That's hard to say. You know, I've never felt no one's tried to silence me, let's say that. And I do have support within the party. You know, it may not be consistent support, but I definitely have support within the party. And, you know, that was another surprise when we won designation. We did not know what Elaine Spall's endorsement would mean, you know. So we worked really hard. We had built a lot of relationships from the first race. So we knew, especially in the East District, that we had the numbers. I got 6,700 votes citywide last race, and over half of them came from just the East District. So we knew that we had the numbers, and we knew that we had a lot of the committee members' support. But when Elaine Spall sends an email out the day before a designation with an impassioned plea for her candidate, you don't know what that's going to mean for people, because a lot of people really love and respect Elaine, and she's done a lot for this community. So, but ultimately, the committee members in the Democratic Party overwhelmingly wanted to see, you know, us, our message. And so we got over 50%. And had I not gotten over 50%, I don't think I would have been designated.
What's the biggest issue that you think helped people decide to vote for you?
I think focusing on the root causes of poverty and being an independent thinker. A lot of people know that poverty is our issue, but the insight that I gained from being really active in the community and in my neighborhood, where, you know, affordable quality housing is at the foundation of giving someone a platform of which to be able to climb out of poverty, and police accountability. I was actually really surprised that every corner of the district understood that police accountability is one of our major issues, and transportation. There's a growing understanding that cars are not necessarily our future, and that if we want a vibrant city, we need to be building streets that are more walkable and bikeable and vibrant for our city, but also that we have to understand that the way that we design our city and where we put our businesses and our services right now is not necessarily, even transportation isn't a thought. So we have to be clustering our services around these transportation hubs.
Sometimes when we talk transportation, and maybe I'm guilty of this too, it comes off as an upper-class privileged idea. Well, I want to be able to live in a luxury apartment and have a walkable community and ride my bike. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's plenty of people in this community who cannot afford cars to drive to work. And if we don't have an infrastructure that supports everybody, it's a problem.
Yeah, and I think that that's it's a legitimate criticism that a lot of the walkable and bikeable neighborhoods end up being gentrified neighborhoods. But there are a lot of people that walk and bike right now because that's their main means of transportation, and it's not safe.
Can I ask both Aversha and Rachel the same question? Do you think the party is open to a lot of different voices, the Democratic Party locally? Are you satisfied that the party is open to voices, Aversha?
Am I satisfied? Absolutely not. Oh, am I satisfied? I'd say no, right? I think there has to be a lot of different voices coming to the table and continuing to have conversations. How open and receptive is the party to that thought? I would say that it needs a lot of work.
And when we talk about the party, we create sort of the specter of a thing. I mean, there are people who run the party. There's a chair, an executive vice chair. Mm-hmm. Certainly the mayor has a lot of influence, mm-hmm. other leaders. What do you think it's going to take to change it in the direction that you want?
Just conversations. Just continued conversations. Moving forward and kind of realizing that different voices and different perspectives should be respected, should be okay, and it would allow for a better, more vibrant city and community. We see that boards work the best when they have different perspectives. When those voices are being shut down and removed from the conversation, it's not helping. And we're seeing that.
Rachel Barnhart?
How much time do we have? Just kidding. Mm-hmm. You know, most shocking things to me when I first ran for office was the number of people angry I was running for office. And I think that attitude has to change. We should welcome people when they run for office. You don't have to vote for them. But the idea that the act of running for office is somehow a terrible thing, that was really surprising to me. I think what we learned this past primary season is that the local Democratic Party really needs to end its process of designating candidates. That's where committee members vote on who they want to the party to endorse and support in primary elections. Most, well, not most, but many of the party-designated candidates were not successful. Many of them had been chosen in a backroom deal process. The process really lost a lot of the legitimacy. And I think it was really disappointing to see the party spend so much time and effort and resources fighting other Democrats while there were races going on in the suburbs against Republicans that really needed attention and that we were not successful in all of them. So we should not be fighting each other. Let the voters decide. And, you know, Yuversia, well, I mean, it wasn't a part, the concerns, Yuversia and I both got hit by a piece that absolutely had some party involvement, even though Yuversia was a designated candidate. And it was hard. I mean, this is not how we should be spending our efforts. Let voters decide, have fair contests. And so I think the party really needs to do some reflection on the results here. We had 36 people who, many of them new candidates, run for office in the city who are Democrats, and some of them were successful. But because of that designation process, one positive thing that happened is a lot of us banded together and helped each other, mentored each other, helped each other get on the ballot. That was a really positive thing. But I think I would like to see the party do some reflection. But instead, on election night, what we saw was a very bitter statement about what happened in the Northwest District.
Can I read that, by the
yeah.
way? I what Rachel's referring to there is in the Northwest District of Council, there were three people running for that seat being vacated by Molly Clifford, including former Judge Leticia Astacio, who came in third, Jose Pio, and Lashana Boose. And Lashana Boose is the party designated, essentially the party establishment was wanting Lashana Boose to win that race. At the end of the night, with all the votes counted, Jose Pio had about a 27 vote, something like that, margin. But there's, you know, roughly 100 absentee ballots, something like that. I mean, I don't know if anybody knows exactly for sure, but the different absentee and affidavits still have to be counted before you can verify. Here's a statement that came to the media before midnight. After those votes were counted and Jose Pio's got that 27-vote lead, Democratic Party Chairwoman Brittany Wells said tonight that when all the votes are counted, Lashana Boose will be our next Rochester City Council member representing the Northwest District. Will be. I mean, that's a... I don't know what it serves to do that.
It was unfair to Jose Pio. It was unfair to the people who voted for him.
And she may be right. I mean, Lashana Boose may clear that hurdle.
I mean, a more gracious thing to say would have said, look, congratulations to both these candidates. Let's work together to finish this process of counting the ballots. But it's that fighting attitude. We are members of the same party, and we need to respect what voters want to do and to put the thumb on the scales the way we saw this last primary season. And look, it happens every primary season, but this last primary season, we saw some activity that I don't think was very healthy or productive, because we all have to work together after these elections are over.
Can I just ask Yuversia and Mary, that statement from Brittany Wells, Yuversia, do you think that's an appropriate statement for a party chair on an election night like that?
I think it's an excited statement. Right. So it's a statement filled with maybe excitement and hope. Appropriate. I would say that I'd have to challenge it being as an appropriate statement. You know, everyone clearly in that race worked really hard. And at the end of that night, there was a lead. And it was by Jose.
I'm trying to figure out what Jose Pio is going to be thinking if he wins this race. You know, you've got your own party declaring that you're not going to win. Mm-hmm. Is that appropriate, Mary?
I think it was probably premature. I mean, if Jose won, it does win. They're going to have to work together. And so, we're all on the same team at the end of the day. So I think that was premature.
Okay. After our only break of the hour, we're going to come back. We'll take some feedback from listeners. I did say something on election night in a conversation with Adrian Hale here on WXXI that I will repeat, and I'm very curious to know what our guests, particularly who are going to serve on the legislature, might think about that. And there's this idea that if you run for office, if you make the sacrifice and take the time to run for office and you don't win your first race, you get branded a loser. And I know our guests get very frustrated by that. When you look at a lot of the leaders we do have in local politics, Joe Morelli, look back at, I mean, I could, I mentioned Joe because he was the first person I thought of who had lost an election when his career started. But there's many, many, many.
Louise Slaughter.
Lovely Warren.
Okay. So there's many. But we'll talk about some of that stigma that comes with it as well. With Rachel Barnhart, Eversha Roman, Mary Lupien, they all won on the primary election and very likely to be victorious in November, as history shows us. So two of them are going to serve on the Monroe County Legislature, one on City Council, and we'll continue the conversation after this only break. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about inclusion in children's media. We're going to talk to Leslie Rotenberg, Chief Programming Executive and General Manager for Children's Media and Education at PBS. We're talking about a wide range of issues when it comes to inclusion. You might have heard on the season premiere of Arthur, Arthur and his friends attend a same-sex wedding, and it went off beautifully. We're going to talk about what inclusion truly means next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rachel Barnhart, I spend too much time on Twitter, as everybody does, and I occasionally see people tweet your way saying, you know, you lost three elections. Haven't you learned anything? You know, and the way that people can try to brand someone a loser is probably very hard. What do you say to that?
From the moment I lost my first election, that was a way to silence me. It was a way to discount anything that I said. It was a way to say, you don't matter, you are irrelevant. I think we have to remember that people who run for office are doing this because they want to serve their community, enhance the conversation, and give people choices. And their election results are extremely complicated. It's not because people didn't like you. I mean, maybe in some cases it is, but they're really, election results are really complicated. You can't just boil it down to one thing and say, this person lost because of XYZ, or this person won because they're so great. Maybe it's because they had a lot of money. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into these things. But yes, the loser tag, it was definitely used as a way to marginalize me. And it's nice to shed that, but you know, these elections don't define who I am. And I'm very proud of what I've been able to accomplish. I'm proud of the young women that I have inspired. I meet a lot of people on the campaign trail who stuck with me and who have even said to me, you know, I couldn't vote for you this election because I like this guy, but I voted for you in this one. And I'm telling you, I'm here for you right now. Just because people didn't vote for you doesn't mean that they were voting against you. And look at all of the wonderful people that we had running in primaries in Rochester this primary season. And think about the people that maybe you didn't vote for, the people who didn't win. Are they going to be tagged losers? A lot of them are not. And most of them are men. I think Hillary Clinton is a great example of someone who lost an election and she was told, you know, you're not allowed to speak anymore. Just stay in the woods. Keep walking. We have to really examine how we view elections, how we view outcomes, and how we view candidates. And yes, it's very disappointing when people do that. And it usually happens on social media, which, you know, I take with a grain of salt. It's not necessarily real life. But I think that if you look at the wealth of people who ran for office this time, none of them are losers.
Eversha?
I'd say, you know, running for office is a courageous move. It takes a lot of sacrifice. And through that, you grow exponentially. So the term loser should not necessarily be associated to, you know, running for office. It takes a woman 7 times to actually run after being asked, typically. So to take the courageous move to run for office and then grow, you make connections. I can tell you that it provided me with a platform to be able to do a lot more than I had done in the past. So just, you know, getting over the feelings of not winning and moving forward and doing for your community in the same way you could do without the elected position is definitely possible. This just helps amplify your voice.
Okay, Mary.
I 100% agree. I think everything that goes into running for office is helping the person grow, helping them understand the community and the kinds of issues that are really important to their neighbors. And there's nothing about it if you don't win that felt like a loss for me personally.
Let me get a phone call. Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, well, a lot to say, but all the things they've been talking about in terms of how difficult and the learning process plus what was just discussed, why don't you try looking at the problems that affect third parties, especially, you know, my interest is in progressive parties to the left, and when you've got a large Democratic body, it's very difficult. Plus, I think the other thing is the election processes we use really need reviving and changing, because a lot of times we have almost no proportional representation concept. It's winner take all that stuff, and there's a lot of other things which we could talk about if there was a longer program about it. But that it's very, very difficult. Plus, the other thing is, frankly, let's be honest here. The reason I'm interested in more radical third parties is because the Democratic Party, for years, has let these problems go and go and go, both nationally and locally. You can list the housing part. You can list about 10 things. So when people say, we are working on this now, it kind of rubs some of us the wrong way. I mean, I'm glad to see people are concerned, but, it didn't just happen yesterday, and there seems to be almost no consequences for that kind of, history.
For the party. For the party.
Go ahead.
Bonnie's saying for the party. So I'm going to start with Mary Loopy in there. You got your hand up over there. Bonnie, yeah. Thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Mary.
And I'm guessing Bonnie is the vice president of the Green Party
locally.
She is,
yep.
I was a Green, and I switched to vote for Bernie in the Democratic primary. And there's a real understanding, I think, that he helped shape, since he had to run as a Democrat for president, that it's very difficult for third-party candidates to win in this system. And I chose to Dem enter because I feel, especially with climate change, with only 12 years left, I don't feel like there's time. Until we put the things in place that would help a third-party candidate, like a proportionate representation, like
ranked choice voting.
Thank you. Ranked choice voting. Those are the things that need to be in place for third party candidates to win. And right now, when you have that spoiler vote, it's very difficult. So I think third party are healthy. And I also think that the Democratic Party right now is made up of people. And I've chosen to become one of those people because I want to see them represent the issues that I care about. And in this city, they, for the last however many years, they are the ones that have been winning. And so I think we need an inside strategy inside the party, but also we need that outside the party to keep pushing.
If we get ranked choice voting of some kind, mm-hmm. would you consider changing parties back to green?
I don't know. Possibly.
Okay.
Ranked choice voting would have been amazing in this last primary. Look at, school board race had how many candidates? The judicial race had a lot of candidates. I don't know if it would have changed the outcome, but it's those kinds of contests where that would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Any thoughts on changing parties? As Bonnie said, consider a third party.
I've been a Democrat since I was 18.
Aversia?
Yeah, I'm a Democrat. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we need progressives inside the party.
Now, absolutely. I did say on election night, that it's going to be interesting to see new faces in the Democratic Party, particularly in the legislature, particularly when you look at a recent issue. You go back to March, Monroe County Executive Cheryl Donolfo announced a quote-unquote across-the-board rate increase for pre-K special education funding that the county controls. And it turns out that it was not an across-the-board rate increase because they increased that rate. And this matters, by the way, because we're seeing providers leave the field because they can make more money doing other things. It's hard to make a living helping kids who need the help desperately. And so this is a big problem. And so when we saw that rate increase, it was for one-on-one, kids who need one-on-one services. But the county created a new group rate, which did not exist before, which did not include a 15% increase, in which the county executive said should not be put on the board for the consideration of across the board. It's a pretty narrow board, it turns out. Rather amazingly to me, the Democrat running for county executive, Adam Bello, on this program, admitted to me, well, he never read the 16 pages of legislative notes on this, which was distributed to Democrats in the legislature and in the media, not to providers. That's why providers didn't know until a couple of months had passed. Now, I didn't read it, and I'll put my hand up in the air and say, as a journalist, I could have. I did not. The Democrats in the legislature basically didn't read it either, and Adam Bello said he didn't either. And what I said on election night is, I know you say that when you ran, ethics has been a big deal, watchdog has been a big deal. You understand that in a primary, maybe it's a little different for voters. But I say people can say what they want about Rachel Barnard. I cannot believe if you're in the legislature that you wouldn't have read that packet.
So I don't know the timing of when the Democrats received that information. I've since been told they really didn't get it with a lot of notice before they voted. So I'm very
before they voted, but forget
I'm very
that.
Well,
they still got it in March.
Here's the thing. One of the skills that I do bring to the legislature is the ability to, I'm an expert on freedom of information requests. I'm an expert at digging through budgets and looking for information and asking really, really tough questions and kind of finding out where the bodies are buried. I don't know if I would have been able to assist in this particular situation.
You are already shilling for your colleagues on the legislature.
Here's the thing. I mean,
did they fail on this?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't there.
I am shocked. I am shocked to hear you say this.
What I will say is that Monroe County, as a huge human services provider, we know they're not doing a good job with our most vulnerable citizens. And I'm looking forward to being a watchdog. And I guarantee you Democrats will like when I do those things to Republicans.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to do them to Democrats as well?
You know that I will always hold people accountable.
Aversia, was that a failure in your party on the legislature?
So I guess the biggest concern for me was the fact that providers weren't informed. And I think that's the perspective that I'll continue to bring in whatever, you know, capacity. So for me, the fact that providers in this case of early childhood education weren't informed or aware, the fact that, you know, CPS, things like that continue to happen where the people who are providing the service are not a part of what's happening. And then the services are not being administered to fidelity because of the lack of communication between the actual people who are doing the work and the people who are making the choices. So for me, that's where I see the breakdown.
Okay. In the last month, just as an update, the county has, and there has been some movement on rates and some of the way providers get paid, which were raised in the last month, particularly after Justin Murphy's story in the Democrat and Chronicle. So the county has responded to some of that, but it didn't happen in March. It happened after the Democrat and Chronicle wrote a piece, and some of this came up. So I guess we'll see. Now, a few minutes left here with the candidates. There are candidates. You're all candidates.
Yep,
you got to win in November, and I understand why. You know, maybe the celebrations are different now than they would be in November. But you're going to win in November. That's what history tells us. And you're going to have to work, well, I don't know about you, Mary, there's not a lot of Republicans in city government. No. There are Republicans in county government. In fact, county government is dominated by Republicans. So you talk about holding accountable. How do you feel about working with Republicans? Do you see any openings there? Rachel Barnhart.
Republicans have always been very nice to me. I got a text message from the chair of the GOP on Tuesday night.
Bill Napier, who's going to be on this program tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I'll sit down and talk to anyone, and I've always had good relationships with people who are both Democrats and Republicans, and I have a lot of fans who are people who want to vote for me who are Republicans and independents, and it's not because they agree with me ideologically. It's because they believe that I will always talk to them and listen to them and do the right thing and explain why I'm doing what I'm doing. I mean, that's one thing that I think we can improve upon is we're operating in silos, and I'm really excited about the opportunity to serve everyone because I'm very proud of the fact that I have been able to expose people who are from different ideologies to progressive viewpoints, and we can have civil discussions about those things, and I know that I can do that in the legislature.
Aversia?
One of the things that I am is a people person. I work with people, regardless of your position, your philosophies. So I'll work alongside whomever I need to ensure that our community receives what it needs, because that's the number one thing that I'm most passionate about. I understand the realities of what's going on in our community, not because someone has told me, but because I have firsthand knowledge, and I'm ready and willing to have conversations and work alongside individuals for progress.
Mary, on the city level, it's a little different. I mean, it's essentially it's Democrats you're working with, but Democrats who have very different views. For example, on everything from housing and transportation to development issues like Parcel 5, which you've been very vocal about. Which I'm sure the Jazz Fest is happy that it still sits vacant, but it's been years now. There are real questions about that. What kind of a voice do you think you're going to bring, and how do you think that's going to mesh with colleagues?
I ran and will continue to be a voice of the people, and we have two sides of the Democratic Party, and I don't want any part of that. You know, it's important to be independent.
You're talking about the factions historically.
Correct.
Which may be viewed as Gantt-Morelli factions.
Sure.
Okay.
So I think it's important to really represent the what the people want. And I think that we're seeing unprecedented levels of engagement from the people. I don't think the Police Accountability Board would have gone the way that it did if we didn't have such sustained activism around that. And I think we're going to need more and more of that as it goes forward with the makeup of the council the way it is. But I have very good relationships with everyone. And I think one of the things that I've really learned with running for office is that politics is all about relationships. And, you know, just to keep nurturing those relationships between people that are on council. And, yeah.
Our guests have all won on Tuesday night, and they are likely in November to be elected to serve two on the Monroe County Legislature, one in City Council. Mary Lupien, who will be a candidate on the Democratic line for Rochester City Council in the East District. And I will close just by saying I hope all of you, after you're elected in November, continue to come on this program and engage with us, engage with our listeners. It means a lot to us here in the community. And so I hope we see a lot of you.
You've done a great service this primary season, Evan, by having candidates on.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So Mary Lupien, thank you very much. Nice having you. Aversia Roman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Rachel Barnhart, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Three voices you're going to be hearing a lot of. First-time winners, and they're ready to serve. Short break. More Connections coming up.